Welcome to Hundreds of Ways, the podcast that celebrates entrepreneurship and lifestyle independence. This week, we're joined by freelance animator Justin Poor as we chat about his last 3 years living out of a suitcase and documenting his travels to his over 18,000 subscribers on YouTube. So join us as we explore which of the Hundreds of Ways belongs to Justin.
Hey, James. Good evening. How's it going?
Doing well. How are you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing really well. I just arrived in Chicago, actually, and we'll be here for a little bit. And it's just getting used to the humidity here over LA. Quite a difference. What's going on over there?
Here, it's 100% humidity every day. So something definitely used to at this point. Today, we have a very special guest, someone who I have known all the way back since middle school. So I have a little anecdote later on that I'll interject with and try not to embarrass him too much with. But today's guest is Justin Poor. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so Justin, really excited to have you on today. I obviously don't know you as well as James, but he's given me a little bit of background, and I've had the chance to poke around your YouTube channel. You've got quite a following on there as well as on Instagram, and also had the chance to check out your website. And just super impressed with a lot of the work you do. We'll dive into that later, but what stands out to me is it looks like you literally don't have a home. You are quite literally always on the road. And maybe that's a poor way to say it, but from the looks of your Instagram channel, I don't know how you keep up, and you must be on a plane 24/7. Can you tell me just like where you are right now and kind of what you've been doing as the world's been shut down the last couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. So to give some kind of like backstory, for the last almost 3 years now, I've been traveling pretty much nonstop and living out of a suitcase. And right now I'm in Cape Town, South Africa, where I've been actually for right now the last, 6 months. And that's where I've been experiencing the whole lockdown and coronavirus and the pandemic and all that stuff. And it's definitely been, it's been quite the experience, you know, being in a foreign country and dealing with what's going on with the world. But the last 3 years has been kind of a roller coaster of travel and work and trying to make it all feasible. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun, but also, yeah, definitely challenging at times.
Justin, your last YouTube video I checked out had you coming home to an empty house where all of your housemates had fled and you were stuck there by yourself for the remainder of the quarantine. I believe that was back in March. Can you tell me about what went down there?
Yeah. So over the last couple of years, I've built up in a really great kind of group of travel friends that we all travel together, or, you know, a few of us will go a certain place. We'll meet up with a few different ones in different places. And so it's never usually me traveling by myself. In addition to my girlfriend who travels with me, we usually always have a couple friends we're either meeting in a certain location or living with in a certain location. And it just so happened to be at the beginning of this year, a bunch of these travel friends decided to go to Cape Town, and we all got a big house together. And as it worked out, I was in a house with, I think, 6 other people, all of which were girls. So it was me, my girlfriend, and then 5 of our girlfriends. And it was an absolute blast. And it was summertime here in Cape Town. And then, like the rest of the world, we were kind of blindsided by the pandemic. And when that happened, borders start closing down, flights become really hard to come by. You know, people are having to repatriate back to the States or Canada, wherever they're from. And so people kind of made the decision to, you know what, I don't want to stay in Cape Town because things are kind of uncertain. I'm going to go back home. And within a matter of a week, I went from being surrounded by, you know, 6-7 people to all of a sudden by myself in this big house here. And it was like a zero to 60 flip of a lifestyle change. So yeah, it was pretty interesting.
So I love your vlog from this time period because you had a chance to leave too, and you chose not to. You chose to stay in South Africa.
Yeah. The long answer is that I benefit tax-wise being outside the U.S. for a majority of the year. I file a certain type of taxes called FEIE, and that basically shields me from a lot of my federal taxes because I'm not using things like the roads and the infrastructure back home. And so they give me a break on taxes. And so if I can stay outside the U.S. for most of the year, I get that break. And so there was no incentive for me to go home because there's no dog or house or car payments or anything that was forcing me to go back home. So I'm like, you know what, let's just stay in Cape Town. Let's ride this out and see how it goes. And so that was kind of my mindset.
Justin, to rewind for a second, you said you have this awesome group of global kind of people you travel with that you got connected with earlier on, and you've been doing that for some time. I, in a similar way, have been traveling for the last 18 months or so, but have met so many people who do it solo travel, individually. Tell us a little bit about how you got connected with that group of people. I mean, it sounds like such a unique way to experience the world and move from place to place.
Yeah. So originally when I started traveling, I was doing it totally by myself. And before I went international, I thought, you know what, before I go outside the U.S., there's a lot of the U.S. I hadn't seen. And so I spent 9 months going from coast to coast, everywhere from Hawaii to Chicago to Maine and everywhere in between. And through that time, I was solo traveling and meeting people through Airbnbs or gyms or whatnot. And then I got word of a company called Remote Year. And their whole stick is that they take you to 12 international cities in 12 months, and they put you there for a month in each city, and you go with a group of 30 to 50 other remote workers and travelers as well. And so for a whole year, you travel with this 30 to 50 people around the world, and you pay Remote Year, and they take care of all the flights, all of the accommodations, and like kind of all the logistics so that you get to work, travel, but not have to worry about that. And hopefully that doesn't sound too much like an ad for Remote Year, but it was an amazing program, and it allowed me to meet a bunch of like-minded travel people who work for themselves or work remotely and also want to travel the world. And that kind of got my foot into that world and started me meeting all kinds of different people who live this kind of lifestyle.
One of the great things about whether it's a nomad lifestyle or just the expat lifestyle is all these sources of connection you can find out. Ellie and I actually met each other at Outsite, which is a similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that for anybody who's considering this, who's listening, gone are the days where you just kind of have to get on a plane and hope for the best. You can, with Outsite, when you go stay somewhere, you get added to a WhatsApp group the second that you book. And it was so fun having kind of this group chat of, even before my plane has landed, hey, what's everyone doing tonight? There's so much community now, both online and local, and so many different ways to find it. It's great. So that's cool that Remote Year worked for you.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, a lot of these travel companies, Remote Year included, have really struggled with the recent state of things. But I think if they're able to bounce back, like, they're going to have such an opportunity, because the world has just realized that you don't need to be in an office to get your job done. And a lot of companies who have had that mentality of, oh, yeah, punch in at this time, punch out at that time, they've had to forcibly go remote. And now they've realized, and the employees have realized, that, you know what, I can work from my living room. And why work from my living room when I can work from, you know, Mexico or from Spain or from Africa? And that, I think, is a huge opportunity for these companies. And I think it's kind of the way the world is going to kind of lean, is this going remote kind of lifestyle, because it's awesome.
And not only that, but you're able to pull from this global talent pool of finding the best talent, especially for more knowledge workers that are able to be anywhere, of, you know, getting to work with that best talent around the world, but also letting your employees have the quality of life that they're looking for and live wherever it is that they want. And another thing that somebody said to me recently, as you mentioned, the punch in, punch out, 9-to-5 life, there's so many of these corporate entities that are realizing, you know, not everybody across the world needs that 9-to-5 time zone to get their exact job done. They may need a few hours in the morning and then a couple hours at night or whatever it may be. But that flexibility is something that's really exciting. And as you said, these companies have a great opportunity to capitalize on. James, we'll make sure to leave some of those in the notes if anyone wants to check them out. I know Wi-Fi Tribe is one, Remote Year, Outsite. There's a great kind of global network through a lot of these organizations.
And like Justin said, if this is something you've considered, obviously things are a little weird right now, given the state of things globally. But as things start to open back up, like Justin said, these companies have been struggling and they want to get back on their feet. And you're more likely to have an employer that's going to be more amenable to this, especially in the States. I know quite a few offices that, even though things probably aren't going to be crazy until January 1st, are just basically have said, no, we're not going to have the office open until January 1st. We're not even going to think about it until January 1st. So this is a great time. Not right now, maybe, but as we're approaching, you know, Europe is coming back online now. Hopefully the States, things are clear up in the next couple months. We are approaching a perfect storm of remote being enabled and support for it worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, my friends included, they think that it's prohibitively expensive to live this kind of lifestyle. And to that, I would say that is a total misnomer. I probably pay less in monthly rent living here in Cape Town or in Greece or in, you know, Bali, Indonesia, than you do back in your New York, Chicago, LA apartment. And I probably spend less on food than most people do. I probably spend a lot less on things than people would think. And yet it's this idea that to travel, you have to be a millionaire. You have to be making the big bucks. And that's just not true. And I think that if you want to live this lifestyle, it is so much more accessible than you think.
So, Justin, I mean, I pull up your Instagram feed and it looks as if you've been everywhere over the last 3 years. Can you just give us a quick rundown in, you know, 15, 30 seconds or less, where some of those places have been that your travels have taken you?
Yeah. So over the last 3 years, I think I visited probably close to 50 countries, and that spanned the entire globe. That's everywhere from Australia to Japan, Indonesia, India. Right now I'm in South Africa, Morocco, Spain, Italy, and then also places like Canada and Mexico and South America. So I've really hit almost every continent and seen kind of a wide range of different places.
And Justin doesn't just visit these places. For listeners who are not familiar with his work, both his Instagram and his YouTube channel, Justin puts out just incredible content about these places. He's an incredible videographer, especially some of the drone work you do is just visually mind-blowing. You really capture you visited Valencia when we lived there a couple of years ago, and I love your Valencia video. You capture the Ciutat de Artes y Ciencias so perfectly with the drone, and you capture the streets and all that. And so, you know, it's not just that Justin's traveling and hitting these places and experiencing them. He's also documenting and sharing all of that with you on his YouTube channel. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, and I think this is something that kind of my friends and family back home, they don't always get. And I'm not going to these places to be a tourist. I'm there to live and work. And a lot of places that I go, I spend at least a month or a couple months. Like I said earlier, right now I'm spending 6 months here in Cape Town. And so while it does look exciting and I get to hang out next to the waterfalls and go diving with manta rays and like all that stuff is really cool and awesome and a cool side effect of traveling, these places I go to, I'm working, and every day is just the same grind that you would have at your normal job. But I'm just happening to do it not from my traditional home. I'm doing it from somewhere abroad. And so, yeah, when I go somewhere, it's not just to be a tourist. It's to live and really experience the place like a local.
So that's the perfect segue to talk about how that's possible. I mean, I see so many people doing what you're doing, and to somebody who's never done it, it can look almost unattainable. And they wonder, how is that funded? How do you make that happen? Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you fund that lifestyle and what you do for a living, what you are doing while you're working in these different places?
Yeah, absolutely. So I get, whether it's DMs on Instagram or comments on YouTube or people emailing me through my website, they ask me, you know, how can I do this? And my biggest advice that I always tell them, first off, is that don't go broke trying to live the travel lifestyle. Don't go broke because you want to have a cool Instagram. You have to make it sustainable, because you may be able to travel for 6 months off of what savings you have, but at the end of that month, those 6 months, you're going to be broke and you're not going to have a job and you're going to be back to square one. And so if you want to make this sustainable, you really need to find a way to have a job that pays you while you travel and pays you from anywhere. And that can be a traditional employer, because as we talked about, a lot of those jobs are going more more online and more work from home. Or, you know, if you have a business of your own or you work for yourself, you're a freelancer, find a way to fund your travel lifestyle, but not in a way that's unsustainable.
And this ties into something that we talk about a lot on this podcast, which is the fun and excitement of entrepreneurship and of these lifestyles that entrepreneurship enables. It's great, and it's what makes this interesting and fun. But figuring out the fundamentals is key. And so, you know, whether you want to stay in one place and just build a business or travel and support yourself while you do so, it's super crucial that you figure out the business part. You figure out, like Justin said, either you have that full-time job that's going to allow you this lifestyle, or you nail the fundamentals of freelancing, of building your own business, and then you figure out how you can continue that as you travel.
Justin, that all sounds really incredible. Can you recap a little bit and just rewind to tell us a little bit about the type of projects that you're working on day to day and some of the clients that you work with, what that looks like?
I do video animation as my kind of my primary gig. And then I also do some video editing. And then on the side, I do things like the vlog, which doesn't really make me any money. But my bread and butter for clients is a lot of video and animation work. And so my day to day is spent a lot of time just in front of my computer, animating stuff, designing stuff, working on script and copywriting, and editing videos, and spending a large chunk of my day right in front of my computer doing that. And I've worked with clients that are small startups all the way up to big corporate clients like Volkswagen and Johnson & Johnson and Lego and everything in between.
So the Lego project, I think you and I spoke about that last time we talked on the phone a couple months ago, but can you share a little bit about that story of how the Lego project came to be?
This is something that I'm sure we'll kind of dive deeper into, but I made a Lego video just for fun when I was starting to learn some animation techniques and learning a little bit about 3D animation. And just as like a fun personal project, I decided to, you know what, I want to make a parody Lego video. And I think at the time, one of the Lego movies had just come out. And so I was kind of geeking out and obsessing about it. And that was great. And it got a few views. But fast forward to 3 years later, which is, I think, a few months ago, I had someone from Lego actually reach out to me and say, hey, I Google searched 3D Lego animation and you were one of the first people that popped up. Do you want to work on some animation for a theme park that we're opening up this summer? And so I was like, obviously, hell yes. Like, that sounds amazing. And it was this weird validation of me working on personal side stuff because I liked it and I was passionate about it, and it leading to an actual job with a company that is a huge name brand. And that was really, it was surprising, but also really validating. And it's been an incredible project to work on.
And this is why it's so crucial to share your work, to publish whatever you're working on, even if it's something that you're doing just for fun. You know, if you're learning to code, learning to edit video, learning to write, really get in that habit of putting work out there, because you never know what project is going to be the one that catches a potential client's attention down the road.
Yeah, and I think that people oftentimes get into this, like, they're self-conscious or they think, well, no one's going to see this, or what's the point, you know? And to me, like, there's been so many times where I have worked on a side project or a personal thing, and I've just put it out there just for fun and not knowing where it's going to lead, you know? Maybe it leads to nothing, but more often than not, it leads to something, whether that's even just someone saying, hey, that looks amazing, or it gets attention of a client and they end up really liking it. And there's been so many like times where I've done that and I've thanked past Justin, being like, oh, thank goodness I put that out there because it paid dividends. And when I put it out there, I didn't know when it was going to pay dividends or if it was. But if I had never done that, I wouldn't be working for Lego. I wouldn't be working for some of these other companies who happened to stumble upon something that I did.
Not to mention all the clients that then come from the referrals that you may get from that client and all the other further projects that may come from that testimonial you get from them or whatever it may be. But I think that's the perfect segue to talk about how you do get your clients. Is it all referral based? Is it, what's your main kind of way that you reach out to get new work?
So for me, I feel like I've been super fortunate in that I got in with this referral network fairly early on in doing animation and design work, and they've been really good to me, and they've sent me a lot of work. But I've also, over time, built up a portfolio of work that now feeds me and feeds new clients and is out there. And if someone types in, you know, corporate animation, one of my videos might pop up. And so going back to like putting your stuff out there, I have enough stuff out there over the years that it's really been able to, yeah, bring work to me and have people find me from all corners of the interwebs. And I've been really fortunate in that, but it took a lot of work to build up that portfolio. And when I was starting out, I was just doing a lot of like tutorials and for fun projects and posting it to my Vimeo account or posting it to my YouTube and like just to post it. And that allowed me to build up that portfolio and that repertoire of work that then someone could look at it and say, ah, oh, this guy kind of knows what he's doing. Let's hire him. Or I can pitch to a client and say, hey, here's kind of what I could do. And that has been super important to have.
Some of the most talented freelancers I know, similar to you, have this incredible body of work, but they, even at the highest of their accomplishments, at the height of their career, aren't able to get consistent work. What are some of the challenges you've faced with, for example, coronavirus happening? Has that slowed work down at all? Have there been other kind of roadblocks along your career as you've been building that portfolio to finding consistent work doing what you do?
Again, I think I've been really fortunate in the fact that I've never really had to struggle too much in finding and fishing for my food. I mean, there have been months where, yeah, it's been a little bit of famine, and there's other months where it's feast and you got too much work to handle. And in those moments, like, you kind of have to realize that it's always a roller coaster as a freelancer. You're always going to have months where it's like, whoa, I got so much work, I can't even take it all on. And then there's other months where it's like, boy, I only got one client this month. And that's the nature of the beast. And part of that is being able to plan and being able to, you know, get your finances in order or get your budgeting in order and be able to make that work. And the other part of it is just being confident that, you know what, like, work will, if I'm doing good work, clients will come. And yeah, and you have to know that it is a little bit of a roller coaster.
So let's go back to earlier on that roller coaster ride, maybe back to a time when you weren't so confident, when maybe there was a little bit more famine than feast. How did you get started doing video?
The short answer is faked it till I made it. And when I was leaving a marketing agency and decided, you know what, like, I'm going to kind of go out on my own. And to be honest, I didn't even decide I wanted to go out on my own. I was deciding when I left this one marketing agency that I was going to go find a job at another marketing agency. And while I was looking for that next job, I had some past clients come up to me and say, hey, can you help us out with X, Y, and Z? And at first it was build a little website here, do a little bit of social media marketing there. And then one day someone was like, hey, we have this event. Can you shoot some video for it? And in my mind, I was like, you know what? I have a GoPro. Like, I've made some like travel montage-y videos back in college. Like, sure. Why not? And totally just faked it till I made it. And that kind of got the snowball rolling, and it started out very small time, you know, $100 here to do a time lapse, $100 here to shoot a real estate video. And that kind of got got that ball rolling and my foot in the door. And from there, it's just been continually having that imposter syndrome of thinking, can I do this? And me being like, you know what? Sure. Why not? And if and anything you don't know, I can Google it and learn it. And having that kind of mentality of like, putting myself out there enough to where I'm not over my head, I'm not in deep water where I can't swim, but I'm just at the limit of my abilities. And what I don't know, I'm confident I can learn. And I think that's super important in the freelance world, is pushing yourself to that limit. Because if you're going to stay in the safe zone, you're not going to grow. You're not going to get the cool projects. You're not going to get the stuff that really pushes you to that next level. And I think I've done a really good job of that, of forcing myself outside that comfort zone and taking on the projects that I know I can figure it out, but I know it's also going to be a challenge.
And that's something I want to really dial in for anyone who's listening that is thinking of doing something similar, whether that's in video or anything else. There's a couple of things Justin said there that I think are super key to that beginning entrepreneurial journey. And the first one is that those first clients came from people he knew, that those existing connections got leveraged. Justin wasn't even looking for freelance work, but he was able to leverage his existing relationships. The other one is, like you said, fake it till you make it. I have a personal entrepreneurial motto that is say yes and figure out how later.
Exactly.
And so for anyone listening, that those two things that Justin just touched on, those are so, so key, like maybe more than anything else in entrepreneurship. So key to starting out.
Yeah. And I think there is this fine line balance. It's like, if someone was to ask me, hey, can you fly a rocket ship to the moon? No, I'm not going to say yes to that. But if someone says, hey, can you create this really, really fancy 3D animation and it needs this, this, and this, I might look at that and be like, well, I know how to do two of those things, but there's five of the things they need on that list. Do I think I can learn those other three things? And if the answer is yes, then yeah, you take that project. You say yes, you fake it till you make it, and you do that. And so it's like that balance. It's like, don't take on something that you know you're going to fail at. But if that is within your reach and you just gonna have to push a little bit for it, oh, take it take that every day.
And then the next time you go to do it, you'll already have the skill.
Exactly.
And be able to take on clients asking for that same thing.
Exactly. And that's how you see yourself constantly progress. Even if it's just little progressions, over time, you'll see your work increase. You'll see the amount you can get paid for things increase, and you'll be able to keep up with the constant pace of whatever industry you're in, because someone's improving in your industry every single day, and you want to be one of those people, and you don't want to be someone who gets stuck doing a certain thing. And then all of a sudden a few years goes by and these young kids in college or someone else who's worked a little harder is getting the jobs that you want.
And one of the great things about being a freelancer through all this, or an entrepreneur in general, is that you're learning on the job. You're learning for the job. And so if you see a project that stretches your abilities and you take it on and you learn those abilities, you get paid for it. And so you can have this lifelong career of learning while also just, you know, your career is driving that learning. I was on the call with a potential client the other day, and they kept asking, oh, by the way, we use this on the server. Do you have experience with this one technology? And it was so crazy. Because I don't remember the last time that I said, oh, no, I've never heard of that. Now it's always, I did that three projects ago with this one client. Oh, that technology, yeah, we used that two projects ago with this other client. If I wasn't an entrepreneur, I'd be probably sitting at a company using the same technology year in, year out. And then when I want to go switch, when I want to go make a change to another company, and the tide has shifted, maybe one technology's phased out, another one's more popular, well, I'm screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just want to play devil's advocate for a second, because that's what I do. There are so many amazing experiences that I've had as a freelancer, as an entrepreneur, where a client's come to me and asked for something, and I've either outsourced it if I don't know how to do it, or figured out how to do it myself. But there have also been plenty of times I've failed. And to be honest, those are the most kind of beneficial things for me, because in the moment, it's terrible. It's scary. You don't know what's coming next, but you look back on it and there's so much to be learned from those experiences. Are you able to share kind of like a time that that's happened, or any sort of challenge that you've run into that has led to failure or has led to an outcome you weren't expecting and you had to deal with, but you ended up learning from?
I haven't failed too much in terms of like over-promising, under-delivering, but I do.
Good to hear.
Yeah, and I think, and maybe I'm breaking my own rule and playing within my boundaries, you know, too much on things. But before I started freelancing and doing what I'm doing now, I worked for a guy who could sell anything, and I helped him run his marketing firm. And his problem was he could sell anything, but he could never deliver on anything. And so what I became was a master at telling clients why things were not done on time or done the way they wanted it to be done. And that was a super valuable lesson, because it allowed me to realize, you know, I never want to be the person that can oversell anything but then underdelivers every time, or does things in a certain way that isn't what I would consider right. And whether that's not paying people enough or not giving a good enough deadline. And it really taught me a lot of lessons that have set me up so that I haven't failed a lot or under delivered a lot, because I know what my limits are. I know what a good timeline is. I know what a good budget is, and I'm not going to screw, you know, my client because I did a bad job. And having that, you know, several years of working for this guy, it really taught me that lesson. You know, if you want to succeed, you have to treat your clients good. You got to deliver on a product that you can stand by. Because if you can't do those things, people aren't going to rehire you. People aren't going to look at your body of work and think it's up to par. And if you're going to be a freelancer, it goes back to being sustainable. You need to have a sustainable business model. And a lot of that comes down to treating people well and doing good work.
And as you mentioned earlier, so much of your work now comes from client relationships. So maintaining that as one of the kind of most important parts of your entire business is crucial if you want the work to continue coming back in time and time again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's clients that I love working with because they're awesome and they understand how I work, and they are always good about, you know, deadlines, and they're good about pricing and making things fun. And I love to work with those clients. And there's been clients that have come to me and said, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And just by the tone of their email and what they're wanting and the timeline that they wanted in, I know what kind of client they're going to be. And I'll say no. I'll say, you know what? I'm too busy, or I can refer you to somebody else because I know that person's going to be a nightmare to work with. And the last thing you want to do as a freelancer, or in any company for that matter, is be the person that people don't want to work with, because it comes back around eventually.
Something that people are familiar with, regardless of career, bad bosses.
Oh, 100%.
Something that I think that people who haven't done the entrepreneur or the freelancer thing is that you can have bad clients. You can have people that come to you to buy your services that are even sometimes worse than bad bosses. We've had potential clients come to us with projects, like you said, the deadlines are out of whack. The pricing makes no sense. Then you get the contract and the terms are just, you know, like basically at any point in the contract, if they want, they can not pay you and they get all your work and, you know, stuff like that. And that's something that I think takes a while to, you're going to at some point get a bad client with a bad contract or something like that. It takes time to learn what those red flags look like, especially when you're hungry at the beginning and you're really, really eager to get started. You're really, really eager to find a project, and you might take on something that is going to be a bad relationship. So learning how to identify those red flags is a huge deal.
Yeah. And I think also you're going to have some bad clients, and especially starting out. And if it's a month where it's maybe a little bit more famine, and then yeah, you got to do whatever you got to do to make ends meet. But if you have the luxury of being able to choose clients, like, that's a great position to be in. That's what you want to be in. And you want to work with great people and work on cool projects. And that's the goal. But don't think that that's always going to be the case. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to make ends meet.
Yeah, 5 years into this, I still have months occasionally, not nearly as often as I did when I was first starting, but I have months where I go, huh, I might have to drop my rates for just this one project. I might have to take on this project where the terms look a little iffy, but hey, we've got bills, we've got people that work for us, that kind of stuff. I might have to make that shift.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Justin, on that theme of always challenging yourself, always pushing your limits, what's next for you?
So for me, I think as much as I love the travel lifestyle, I'm getting to an age where I'm starting to realize that I'm not looking for the next like travel adventure as much as I was in the past. I'm now looking more towards, ooh, I would love to decorate a house, or ooh, I can't wait to get this new car, or like a dog, or like, you know, very homebody type of desires, and which is totally different from the last 3 years. And I think travel will definitely play a role in my life forever. But the near future, I think, looks more find a place that I love, whether that's a Cape Town or that's back home or that's Vancouver, Canada, where my girlfriend's from, and start to settle down a little bit and take on that next adventure, because I think that is actually really exciting and it's different. And it allows me to build towards something like a home that I can go back to versus living out of a suitcase and a closet, my own clothes. And it's a weird fantasy to have considering the last 3 years of my life. But I think that is the next big adventure for me, besides work stuff.
So that really gives a breakdown of where you're going next in terms of your personal life. But in terms of your career, it seems like you are always growing, developing, learning. What is the next phase for your career? Is it something that you want to keep as, do you want to be a freelancer for the next 10 years? Are you looking to grow out your own agency? Are you looking to bring on employees? What would be the next step for you in terms of a career path?
So I think professionally, I'm constantly striving to just be a little bit better than my last video. And I think in the future, let's say the next year, a couple of years, I really want to work with a cool collection of really talented video makers and marketers and business people. Because a lot of times in the past, I've worked with some really cool companies, you know, really big name companies, but it's usually on my own. And it's usually by myself working on my computer with not a huge feedback loop other than the client giving me feedback. And I would love to work with more creatives and people who can give me feedback. That's not a client. Someone who's in my industry, knows the lingo, knows what I'm doing, and say like, hey, how about this? Or hey, what do you think about this? And getting that creative energy from other people and working with, yeah, just cool creatives on projects, whether that's video stuff, whether that's experiential stuff, and expand my network in that way. Because as great as it is to be a freelancer and work for yourself, sometimes it can be a little bit isolating. And it's always great to work with people who are like-minded or in your industry and feed off each other.
And I think that's a great note of something that I've run into personally is missing that office vibe. So many people laugh at me when I say, you know, I miss the water cooler talks or even being in a creative brief session and going through bouncing creative ideas around on a team. It's very different when you're working as a freelancer because your direct dialogue is with the client and you're working more solo. So totally hear you there and excited to see where you go from here. I think moving forward, I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the advice you have for listeners of if they're interested in doing what you're doing and moving into not only the lifestyle portion, but working in video or post-production or motion design. What are some resources that you'd recommend or what was your path to getting started on animating like you do?
So, Elliot, before we were talking, we discussed that we both kind of have opposite paths. And it sounded like you got a degree in what I do now in film and video, and then you went the business route. Well, I went the opposite. I got a degree in business management, and then from there, I have ended up in animation and video. And all the stuff that I know how to do now, I've self-taught myself. And if you are looking to get into video production or animation or motion graphics or design, a lot of those resources can be found online. And everything I learned, I YouTubed it. I went through tutorials and I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours geeking out about video stuff online. And that's the amazing thing about the internet. It's all there for you to take advantage of. And there's tons of things like whether it's Skillshare or lynda.com or Masterclass, you know, all of these different online resources are available. And it's a great time to be someone who wants to self-teach themselves this kind of stuff. And I would say if you want to get into doing similar stuff to what I'm doing, that's a great place to start. You know, don't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars getting yourself into debt if a lot of those resources can be found online.
I think that's a really great way to try out the field before you completely transition into a new career and leave your job. So,
yeah, I think that there is a huge value. I loved college, and there's a huge value of going to college because it helps you build relationships, helps you build some of that work ethic. But if you're someone that maybe doesn't want to go that route, the world we live in now is really friendly to an alternative method. And so I'm a huge fan of self-teaching and self-learning.
And going back to what Elliot was saying about trying out the things that you like in a more professional context, I've known Justin again, well, now for like 500 years because we're aging, as Justin mentioned. But
going, you're so old, man.
Going way back to middle school, one of the things I remember about Justin in middle school is,
oh gosh, here we go.
he would always be working on these flip books.
Yes.
And, And he would do these stick figure animations, and they would fight, and they would drop in and out of the scene. They'd open up a portal, and they'd fall through the ground, and they'd come back through the ceiling on the other half of the page, and they'd fly off, and they'd explode, and we'd zoom in on their head. And this was all pencil by hand with these, you know, I think, did you make those flipbooks yourself?
Like okay, this is a great piece here, and I'll try to keep this short. So when you look back at your life, and I actually got this from Adam Savage, who was one of the hosts of MythBusters, he says that when you look back at your life, it always looks like a straight line. It looks like of course you did this thing because it got you to this thing, and then of course you did that thing because it got you to this thing. But when you're in it, it looks like a roller coaster that has no clear path forward. But that's what my life looks like now looking back at those flipbooks. It looks like a straight line. Of course I was making animated flipbooks because look what I'm doing now. But at the time, I didn't know making flipbooks was going to lead to anything. And it kind of goes back to that point of like, you know what? Put time into your side projects. Put time into your passion projects. Put your work out there, because at the time, you don't know where that's going to go. But if you don't put it out there, it's not going to go anywhere. And those flipbooks are a great example of that, because I was making those on physical paper. And then I also started doing that around the same time with like the very first version of Flash, Adobe Flash, that my dad got for me. And I started making these like little movies of these stick figures fighting, they were punching and shooting rockets at each other. And I wish I had those. But it's a great life lesson that, yeah, it's like put time into your passions because you don't know what it's going to lead to. But I love that story. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I think they were so fun. I can actually like see them in my head a little bit if I think real hard about them. But it's just so crucial to spend time on your hobbies and to explore things that you want to explore. You never know what, like Justin said, you when you look back, things look like a straight line, but you never know what little thing that you try today might end up being your career 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah. And I think another, kind of going back to Elliot, your piece of advice, I think that you can change your life so quickly. And people oftentimes get into these jobs where they think, you know what, this is the rest of my life. This is the next 40 years of my life where I get a pension and I have to grind. And at the end of it all, I get to be a retired person that gets to travel. You know, and that's a really sad outlook, because people don't realize that you can change your life in 6 months. You can change your life in a year, in 2 years. Like, so much changes. And you don't have to be stuck in whatever job you're in now. You can flip that on its head and decide to be a furniture maker, you know, tomorrow if you want to, or a restaurateur, or any number of jobs. But you have to start putting in the work. You have to kind of start chipping away at it and put your work out there and put some time into it, because it does take time, but probably not as much as you think it does.
So as we've mentioned, with the internet and the invention of so many different ways of communication, there are a million ways to go about learning, becoming a video editor, getting into the field that you're in. What are some of the resources you'd recommend our listeners to, whether those are books, individuals, shows, courses, whatever they might be, for people who are interested in learning more?
I follow a number of accounts on social media, and I'll give you guys a list so you can link down to them in the show notes. If the listeners want some like visual eye candy in terms of social media people that I think have really good like design taste, and they give out some tutorials and stuff. But some of the I follow that I really respect and I've actually worked with, his name's Johnny Harris, and his wife is Harris. And Johnny, he works for Vox and does a series called Borders. And if you're looking for kind of like a masterclass in good storytelling and paired with incredible visuals and like really cool maps and like animation and stuff, like, he is someone that I get lots of inspiration from and probably copy a lot of his style in terms of the stuff I do on YouTube. So that's someone who I think if you want a good piece of inspiration, Johnny Harris and his wife is Harris are great creators.
Awesome. Well, as Justin said, we'll link down to the Harris's and a couple other resources that Justin shared with us down in the liner notes. For anybody who wants to learn more about Justin's work, maybe see his portfolio, you can visit him at justinpoor.com with two O's and an E. We'll link that again in the link, the liner notes down below. And also make sure you check out his YouTube channel and his Instagram. Justin is a phenomenal producer of videos on YouTube, and he is a just absolutely fantastic photographer. So as he mentioned before, if you're interested in adding some eye candy to your life, check out his YouTube channel, check out his Instagram. Justin, I think that's all we've got for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great getting to chat, and thanks so much for your time today. Really enjoyed getting to talk.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks so much.
See you, Justin. On next week's episode, we'll be talking to another longtime friend of mine, Tim Chow, as he shares his journey from working sales at companies like Yelp and Zenefits to launching his video and photography studio, Wilco Productions. Until then, stay safe as you walk whichever of the hundreds of ways belongs to you.